Okay, so today we're going to keep marching through the MicroPython stuff, kind of get to some of the pieces of the rest of your kit, including how to control those server motors you have in your kit. We'll start out by walking through the couple in-class examples and one way to do them. I think as you'll see, the more of this you do, there's a lot of different ways to get to the same answer effectively. So what you see today, don't think of it as the perfect way to do solve those problems. It's a way. I tried to solve them in a way that's pretty straightforward. There are more clever ways than how I did these, I think. But this is one way that we'll talk about. So if you're trying to learn this coding stuff, that is a good way to go about it. Okay, how can I solve this same problem in four different ways, using, can I do it with for loops? Can I do it with a while loop? Could I use if-thens? And that's one way to kind of get practice for a problem you kind of understand. Right? So get a solution, and then, well, how could I do this in a different way? And you start seeing different approaches to this problem. I think that's probably a good practice for most engineering stuff. There's often multiple ways to get to the right answer. Before we get started, however, any questions from you guys? Yes. Sure. So the place to go, kind of one reason I've been trying to flash that slide up regularly. Let's thinkits.com. Oops. Let me get it up and then I'll move it over there so you can see it. I'll just find it first. So I would have this documentation bookmarked. Right. So for all the functions we've talked about, there's information there. Right. So information about the board itself, the hardware that's on the board, like you have data sheets even if you wanted to go that far. Probably a bit much for what you're trying to do. Information about, some of you guys have seen this already, the LEDs start flashing at you when stuff goes wrong. So there's information there. And then there's basically some of the tutorials contain some of the basic things, right? Some pretty well done. Some of our stuff is based on that. And then, here you have yellow and blue LEDs. Intensity has to be between some kind of value, right? You also could probably just search within the documentation intensity. And let's see. Yep. So then you get to kind of the full documentation of that method. What does it need to be passed to it for the information? So that's what I say when I say professional programmers will have this documentation up. They're not remembering exactly what those range of values always needs to be, but they have an idea where to go to get that answer. Like, I know there's some kind of function about the intensity. What's the range? Oh, okay, go to the documentation and just look it up. Yep. So this kind of tells you what it needs to be. And that's true for, if you forgot, for example, what are the functions for the ADC? Well, okay. Here's going to be a pretty good example of how to do that in addition to what we've done. And then what you can do, there's methods beyond. You're getting kind of the basics, right? There's even more advanced ways to read the analog conversion and things like that, right? Read it every certain number of seconds and things like that. So, even when I'm writing the example code for you guys, I'll have this open. I don't remember all the syntax perfectly. Yep. Other questions? Yeah, so from the main MicroPython page, go back far enough. Docs, documentation. And there's a variety of links there. You normally will be able to search for whatever you're looking for. Their search is pretty good. Okay. There's information about the kind of PyBoard specific stuff. There's also information about the language itself, some more advanced things if you wanted to do that. Other questions? Okay. So, you mentioned it once already, so I'll mention it again. All the code we're talking about is available in that repository. There's a ton of it there. Been adding these in-class scripts, in-class examples as we go as well. So I've been adding to that, and we'll keep adding things throughout the semester as it get. If there's common things I hear people are struggling with, or I'm getting questions from you guys, let me know. I can add extra examples. So that's one reason where the more questions you ask me, the more I can help you. Right? If you're confused and asking questions, I can't provide extra help. Right? So let us know what you're struggling with, and we'll try to provide extra examples to help you learn it. Okay, and of course that's linked directly from the class page too. Right? All the scripts, I'll add a direct link from the class page. Okay. So our in-class exercise 4, or 5 from last time, was this. We wanted to divide the range of the flex sensor into 4. All right. And then basically, since we have 4 onboard LEDs, what I wanted to do, or suggesting you should do, is based on how much that flex sensor is bent, light up that corresponding, some kind of relationship between how far it's bent and how many LEDs are showing. So, right. In other words, if it's not bent at all, none of the LEDs should be on. Bend it a little bit, one LED should be on. You bend it a little bit more, 2, 3, and then 4 when it's bent all the way over. Okay. One thing that's kind of common, let me grab it out to show you. There you go. So for the LED, or for the flex sensor, if you just bend it like that, you're not actually bending the part of it that changes resistance. Right, so it's the top part that has kind of the graded pattern. That's what needs to be bent to change the resistance. Okay, everybody see that? Right, it's the kind of top. If you bend it just at the connector, it's not really bending. It needs to be kind of bent that top part. Okay. Okay. So. We know we're going to need to use the flex sensor. How do we read the flex sensor? Sure. Kind of general, what kind of input is it? Sure. So it's an analog sensor, right? So we're using that ADC. Okay, and then we know we're going to need all 4 LEDs, right? So that part right there, we can kind of already get the kind of setup piece of the code together, right? If we're wiring the flex sensor just like we did in class, we were plugged into X22, right? So that's what that tells us, where the kind of part of the flex sensor we're reading is plugged into. And then we know that this is how kind of we initialize those LEDs, basically, so that we can turn them on and off. Okay, so I get that, and where do we go from here? Okay. Talked about this a little bit, but I want to make the point maybe more explicitly today. I think before you sit down and start writing code, you need to make sure that you know what algorithm you're actually trying to write code for. Okay, separate out what you want to do from the code you need to write to do it. Because right? If you don't know exactly what the algorithm you're following, the flow chart of how you want to read the sensor and do stuff with it, right, you're not going to be able to write code for it. Right? So I think those are two separate ways of thinking and kind of pieces of the process. Figure out what the flow chart is, if you will, of what you want to do, and then figure out how to translate that into the actual code. Right? If you're trying to figure both of those things out at the same time, it gets a little bit more difficult. So for this example, I actually wrote out my notes. This is my sketch out of how that works. So I thought about this probably a little bit beyond what you guys did, because I'm a nerd and that's what I do. The flex sensor, and some of you guys saw this. These are notes from my iPad. It will change values if you bend it this way. It will change values in the opposite direction if you bend it the other way. So rather than bending and doing 4 ranges over the whole bend, I did 4 on one side, 4 on the other, to follow kind of based on the kind of last hint here, or last part of that problem specification, right? It doesn't say which way it was bent. If you went only one direction, that's cool too, but I went both sides, okay? So what I did was, well, at zero, right, if you just let sit this thing and let it sit there and read it, you're going to get some value, and actually it might change a little bit, right? It's not going to be static fixed. It's real sensor. There's some noise there. So you probably want, when I draw those kind of two vertical lines around zero, there's probably some bounds that is basically zero, basically not bent. Okay, so I picked that. That's kind of one range. There's some kind of dead zone, we would call it, around that's actually basically straight enough to be called straight. Okay. And I said, well, there should be four zones on that on either side of the center point, whatever I think center is. So that's where I kind of, so I drew out my range on either side, sketched it out. Okay. Well, if I think about what the center reading is, I can maybe divide up those ranges on either side equally. Okay. So between my center reading and then maybe I have kind of a maximum reading over here for my sensor, if it's bent one way, I can divide that into four and then maybe put half of the center segment on that side too. Okay. And I can do the same thing if it's bent the other way. I can maybe figure out what the value is at center and then figure out what its value is if it's bent all the way this way. And divide that region into four and then put half of the center one around that too. So what I really end up with is kind of 4.5 segments from the center point to one side, 4.5 segments from center point to the other. Okay? And then basically I can do the calculations and figure out if I know, I know the center and I know the maximum this way, I can figure out I need to divide that by 4.5 and I get the numbers for each of those divisions. Right? And I can define the center and then the maximum over here, divide that into 4.5 segments and get those numbers. All right. So that's basically what these do. Okay. So minimum ADC. Right. So I have center. For me, it was about 3275 on my ADC, my board, and how I had it rigged up and the temperature and all that kind of good stuff in my office. Right. If I bent it all the way to one side, kind of minimum value I got is 2875. If I bend it all the way to the other, I got about 3850. Is the max I ever saw when I was bending it. So that sets the range of values I could expect the ADC to be in. From center to 2875 in one direction, from center to max ADC, 3850 in the other. Okay. And then based on that little chart that I drew up in a few minutes, I know that there are 4.5 segments on either side. So I can take that range of values from center to the min or max and divide each of them by 4.5. Okay. And then I know from those calculations what the kind of breakpoints are and what number of LEDs I want to trigger. Yes, ma'am?
Okay, so I got it to do all of the LED lights. Like, yep. It would either do like the red and the yellow or the red, yellow, green, and blue. So this is the way I like to fix it? Because the way I had it evenly divided.
Yeah. So if you went just four segments across, is that? Yeah. So if you did that, probably at rest, it's going to be between some zones. We can look. If you want me to look specifically, let me know. So again, this is just one way, right? We can be a fancier. You could have taken this. Oh, I need four zones and looked at, okay, if I bend it this much, what's the number? And that's going to be my hard point no matter what. If I bend it and done those, it got those numbers kind of experimentally, right? So you could hard code these numbers in. I just took a more general approach, right? So I could plug in a different kind of flex sensor and just have to change those numbers up there, not redo all this actually physically knowing what those numbers are. Okay, so I wrote this in a way that I think is more reusable because I only need to measure, basically figure out three things about any flex sensor I'm given, and I have the whole ranges figured out rather than having to go do each little point experimentally. So basically all this is doing is figuring out what number is for each one of those lines in this chart, what the breakpoint is in the ADC value. Okay. That's all this does. Okay. And then I have, in this case, there's a bunch of ifs and elifs, right? And I've cut out kind of the all the LF statements just so that they fit on the slide right now. You can look at the GitHub version. But the only real kind of maybe trick here is that basically you can look, the zones are symmetric about the center point. Okay, so that's the other thing that just drawing out this little simple diagram will show you. Right? I have kind of bending either way, zones on either side of the center. So when I'm turning on and off the LEDs, I'm checking for both of those things. Oops, wrong way. And you do that with ORs. Right? So if my value's on the low side of four LEDs, or if it's on the high side and should be four LEDs. If either of those things is true, then this OR statement is true. Right? So I turn on all the LEDs. Okay? And then I have one, well, if it's greater than the three LED segment, right? I have an ELF, greater than three LED segment, max or min, I turn on three. Right? So I start walking in from the outside with my if statements towards the center. And I get all the way down to where, well, if the values are basically in that center zone, then turn everything off. Okay. And that's the one piece that you probably have to remember is that in each one of these, you're going to have to be turning off the ones you don't want on still. Okay. And then our normal kind of, in this case, waiting half a second to before you loop around and try it again. I think I want to stress, and we'll do it again in a second, make sure you think about the algorithm, write it out, sketch it out by hand. Those were my literal notes for this problem when I did it up. You know, just scratch note on my iPad, which is why it's kind of messy and small. But I think if you're not doing this, if you're trying to figure this out and the code at the same time, it gets hard. Right, particularly as you're solving more and more complex problems. Or if you're trying to learn the coding, you're trying to figure out an algorithm while you're learning the coding, that's a little tough. Right, so get your algorithm hammered out, flow it, make sure it's going to work, and then translate it into the right syntax you need for Python. Right. And quite often, if you're thinking about this, like we've talked before, this is also going to give you ideas of what kind of structures you should be using. So for example, this is, you know, if it's in that range. Well, I probably should be using if statements. All right, so writing it out in plain English is going to help you kind of decide where the best ways to do things as well. Right. Another way to put all this that I kind of hammer into my grad students, both about their code and their research ideas, if you can't explain it to someone in just plain English, then you don't really understand it well enough to be writing code for it. So that's kind of another check for you. Can you explain your algorithm just in plain English to somebody else? And that's where another piece, where having more than one person on your team when you get to your final project that actually understands the coding piece, hopefully we all do by then, talking about it, trying to explain what you're doing to one another can help you make all this better, basically. You're going to get feedback from your teammates. Okay. Heroes in class exercise number 6. Well, I guess before we move on to questions, I know it's probably a bit much to see. Check it out, the solution. It's on GitHub already. Once we get out of here today, figure out another way to do it. Like I said, there's infinitely different many ways to do it. Maybe I'll try to post another one as well so you can see how I might do it differently as well. But that's a good way to kind of, like I said, to learn these things. Have one algorithm and solve it, write the code 4 different ways for it or something. So questions about that one. Okay, let's move on to exercise 6. So exercise 6 was to take your force sensitive resistor, this little guy, and the harder you squeeze on the circular part, that's what it'll change. That's what the sensing is. The brighter the blue LED should be. Okay, so if I squeeze it really hard, I want the blue LED to be really bright. If I'm barely squeezing it, I want the blue LED barely on. If I'm not touching it, I want the blue LED off. Okay. So this, like the flex sensor, is an analog sensor, right? So we're going to need an ADC. And we know we're going to need to set up the blue LED. So we know that kind of setup piece already. Okay. So let's talk maybe through what an algorithm could be for accomplishing what we just said. Okay. So the blue, well, let's review that maybe. Oh, it was already up there. So we can review the LED part, intensity. Type. Okay. So here's a, let me read that really quickly, but faster than me reading it to you. Maybe make it bigger. So this intensity function, for a given LED, either the blue one or the yellow one, those are the only two that work here, as it says, right? I can do, instead of LED.on or LED.off, I can do LED.intensity and give it a number. And as we see here, that number has to be between 0 and 255, right? And depending on what that number is, the LED brightness will change. And it's basically doing this via PWM, which we learned about last time, right? So it's actually, when you set that intensity, you're turning that LED, you're telling it how quickly to turn the LED on and off. And it's turning off so quickly that our eyes perceive it being off sometimes as being dimmer. Okay. So I have some value. I need to somehow get some value and decide how 0 to 255 should map to whatever I'm doing with the force-sensitive resistor, right? Sure. That's exactly what we want to do.
Certain values,
yep.
Or certain ranges.
Sure. So there's a few ways we could do that. So I think you just said certain ranges. So you're suggesting four ranges or something? Or?
Well, I mean, I don't think so.
Okay. Okay. So I could divide up the how hard I'm pressing into four different ranges and set a fixed intensity within each one of those ranges. Sure, that's one way to do it. Okay, or I could use 10 different ranges if I wanted to. What else could I do? Yeah.
I was trying to set up a variable so that I could input it directly, but the voltage when it returns is a float, but intensities are integers.
Needs integer, that's right. So that'll be one little thing here we'll have to worry about. Yeah. I have a range of, yeah, go ahead.
You can map it just like you did with the force sensor to the voltage.
Exactly. I can write a function, right? I have two sets of numbers. I can write a function that relates the two, right? So I don't have to divide it in ranges, right? Right. I know the linear ADC, or the ADC range of that force sensor has to be between 0 and 495, right? I know that the LED intensity, it expects an integer between 0 and 255, right? So I have an input I have, you know, I know the input to this function is between 0 and 495, and the output is 0 to 255, right? I can just draw a line. I can do a, write a function to map, and a linear fit is probably a pretty good choice. So I can just take, do a normal linear mapping there where I can find the slope between those guys and y-intercept and all that kind of good stuff. Okay. So rather than having to divide in ranges, I can map essentially mapping 0 to 495 directly to 2, 0 to 255 via that linear fit. One note about that linear fit, just for your own kind of side info, that's not how our eyes actually process light. It's kind of interesting. So if you do this linear fit, it won't appear linear brightness based on how hard you're pushing. It's actually exponential, I think. So based on the output of that function, though, we're going to set the LED intensity. Okay. Let me show that one. Okay. I'm going to show that one in Atom because it's a little bit longer. Where'd you go? Excuse me. Okay. So we know we had between 0 and 495 were the absolute maximums. Okay. Well, I took my sensor, because I know it's a real sensor, and quite often 0 for your sensor is not going to be exactly 0 mathematically in your reading. So when I took my sensor and I had it just sitting there and I wasn't touching it, it was varying between 2 and 4. Okay. So I set a kind of buffer, said if it's less than 5 pressure, I'm just going to count that as not touching it. Since the reading I got back. Because whenever I touched it, it jumped up pretty quickly beyond this. Okay. So it was less than 5. The kind of minimum value I'm going to expect from the sensor is 5. I squeezed it as hard as I could. I could only get to 4,000 or so, not 4,095. Okay. So I actually set, I knew the theoretical limits were 0 to 495. You can get a little bit more precise than that based on your particular sensor you have. And like actually, for these kind of sensors, that's going to vary on temperature and all kinds of other things. Right? So you can do better than just a theoretical range. And I knew the LED minimum intensity is 0, and the maximum intensity is 255. Right. So rise over run, and then solving for the y-intercept. Okay. That's all these two guys are doing. Solving for the m and the b, and my y equals mx plus b. So I do that. I read the force-sensitive resistor. And then the one trick you, the kind of one piece you might have had to look up beyond the algorithm is if you have a function that expects an integer, you can wrap whatever number you need to be an integer inside int. Int and then parentheses. We'll cast it to an integer if necessary. Right. So this, inside here, this equation will end up being a float. It will have some decimal places. This will just chop off the decimal places to make it suitable for the brightness function. Okay. I print out the information, right, and then set the intensity based on brightness. Okay. And in this case, I'm sleeping a little bit less. I'm only sleeping a tenth of a second. And here's a link to explain why it's not going to look like it's varying the right way to you if you do it this way. So questions about that one?
So say like I did this at my house and yep. I'm running it and it's not running the same way because it's like a different temperature and stuff?
It shouldn't be that big of a difference. Uh-huh. Like this would change for what you're doing. This would change by like 1 or 2, not significantly.
I did it in terms of the voltage.
Yeah.
So that it was a smaller number.
Sure. So that's fine. So I have that option here too. Should be basically the same. Like there'll be minor variations based on temperature and things like that, but it should be basically the same if it was working earlier. Questions? Okay, a few other things I want to point out about both of these. You notice in both cases I'm printing stuff out in addition to lighting the LEDs. Right. So let yourself know. I'm going to be connected to the REPL. Like these print statements in both cases, there's... We can look at the full version of this. The print statements in each case will let me know what I think should be happening once I'm inside that if-then, that part of the if-then. Right. So... If I'm getting that, okay, well, and then the LEDs aren't doing the right thing, well, okay, I need to look at the LED code. My kind of logic is right, but the LED part's not right. So give yourself information, basically, kind of what I want to point out there. So that code's there for you. Okay. Other questions? Okay, well, let's look at the servo motor in your kit. Okay, whoops. Put the servo motor in your kit will look something like this one. I forget the exact one you guys have. What does your servo look like here? You get a black one. Yep, so it's yours is black. Mine's blue. What have I got? And you have probably brown, orange, red wires, okay. Okay. So this shows gold, red, black. We're going to have orange, red, brown, actually. Okay. That's the two standards for these hobby servos. You'll see yellow, red, black, or you see... Orange, red, brown. Yes, sir. Yeah, you should have wires in your kit that have male connectors. So you have some male-to-male wires. You also have some male-to-female sides as well in your kit. You also have the option, I've drawn it here going through the breadboard. You could plug these, like if you have this black wire is male to male, you could plug it directly into the ground side on the servo itself rather than going through your breadboard. You could do that as well. So black, red, gold are brown, red, orange. For the servos you guys have. Okay, it seems like most of you guys got it plugged in, or at least every other person, so you look on your neighbor if you need to figure it out. So, these are the core functions available to you to control one of those servos. Okay? The first thing we're going to need to do is create an instance of a servo object. So we're going to store, in this case, servo 1 is a variable. And I've said, hey, pyb.servo1 is what I want to store there. Okay? But they are numbered so that servo 1 is connected to x1, servo 2 will be connected to x2, servo 3 to x3, servo 4 to x4. So you actually have four places on your board where you can use this special servo syntax. x1, 2, 3, 4. All right? Once you've created that instance, you can give it and tell it what angle to go to. So angle and then the number is just in degrees. Okay. The kind of most advertised distance is plus or minus 90 degrees. If you try to get out near those edges, you're going to get weird stuff happening with these hobby servos. You're going to be much better staying to plus or minus 60 degrees towards the center of the range of that servo. Okay. Note that when you give it an angle to go to, it starts getting that command, and then MicroPython moves on to the next step immediately. It doesn't wait for the servo to get to that angle before it continues on its path. Okay, so you need to give, you want something to happen after the servo gets to a certain angle, you're going to have to wait some time. So in this case, I'm sleeping for 1 second. To give this, just give the servo 1 second to move to 45 degrees. Okay, everybody got that? That's kind of a common mistake for these. Yes? Okay. I can do, well, says, sorry, 60, but wait a second, move back to minus 45. I should go back to the other side of center. Okay. You can also get information about the current angle of the servo by calling servo.angle without any argument. Okay. Note, however, that it's not measuring the angle of that servo. It's just telling you what the last angle you told it to move to was. Okay, let me say that again. When you call it this way without any argument, it's going to give you an angle back. It's not measuring the angle. It's telling you the last value you told it to go to. Okay. You also have the option of telling it how long to take to get to a certain angle. So this is in milliseconds, the second number. If you have two arguments to angle, it's the angle to go to, and then how long it should take to get to that angle. So in this case, that's 2 seconds, 2,000 milliseconds. Okay, so maybe give this a shot. Right. Of course, you're going to need also to add input import PYB at the top. Yes?
So when you put a comma and you put whatever number after the angle, it's automatically going to know, take this.
That's the number of milliseconds in... how long in milliseconds?
Okay.
That's right. If there's no second argument, it will go there as fast as it can go.
Okay.
Physically. Yes?
But it wouldn't matter that we have milliseconds at the bottom and 1 second up
the top. Well, the sleep function is part of the library. The sleep takes seconds. Yeah, so if you do sleep underscore MS, it would want milliseconds here. Yeah. That's a good question. So you guys, heads up. This one will come up, particularly when you're working on your final machines, final rope designs. When you call this first function up here, the servo is going to center.
It's going to center where it's located.
It's going to center.
Oh, it's going to center on
it. It should center, yes.
Okay.
So that can cause things, weird things to happen with your design, right? If you need it to be somewhere else. Okay, sounds like most of you have servos moving around. These guys, those little servos you have, are going to be pretty good at positioning something light, dictating an angle. They don't have a ton of torque, right? So if you try to drive some big, huge arm going out to the center, this servo is not going to work for that. Okay, so they're going to be good at positioning something that's pretty light, and or like pulling out a pen or something like that that would trigger a larger mechanism. So you maybe could trigger a much larger mechanism that may be gravity-fed or something by using the servo to pull a pen or something out. Yes? Hang on to that for just a second. Okay. I want to show you guys also a way we actually can get input from the user through the REPL, which can be really helpful when you're debugging or tuning your designs. Okay. So the way we can do that is use this command called input, right? So here's one way to do that. I'm going to say, well, hey, I'm going to ask the user to give me an angle they want to move the servo to, okay? So I print out some information about what I want the user to do to the REPL, and then this input command will wait for them to hit enter, right? Hopefully types more stuff that makes sense, and then hit enter. And then whatever they input is going to get stored in that variable, desired angle input. Okay? You guys see any problems with this? Right. So your user doesn't know what zero angle is. Your user doesn't know a lot, really, about this system so far, for what we've given them. Okay? What other issues?
Well, we can't rely on this during the competition because they're letting us.
Sure, you couldn't be entering angles in the competition. Sure, that's kind of an issue, maybe. Would be a nice way to tune a mechanism, maybe, while you're testing, though. Oh, how about if we go to 46 instead of 45? You could enter angles in and see. Okay. I think there's a big issue here related to our earlier point. Was that? Yeah, so the user could give you an angle that is not really valid. Right? So they could put 327 there. Right? 1032.7. Right? That's not going to work. Okay. Furthermore, you can't really trust your user to put a number at all, actually. Right? Maybe they say yes or just hit enter or nothing. Okay. So anytime you're accepting user input, you have to check the input to make sure they gave you something that makes sense for what you're asking for. Okay. So in this case, we're going to ask it for the angle, basically. And what we're going to do, what we saved from the user here, we're going to try to convert that to an integer based on what we saw that integer function earlier, right? So this function says, hey, take whatever's in this variable and try to make it into an integer. So if it's a number, we should be able to do that. If the user entered 23, we should get a 23 back from this function and stored in this value. If they typed in some string or some nonsense, when it tries to convert it to an integer, we're going to get an error. And we're going to get a specific type of error called a value error. Right? And what that's saying is, hey, I can't make that thing into a number, whatever you just typed in and gave me. So in this case, we're going to say, well, we're going to make the desired angle equal to the current angle we're already at, or something like that. Okay. This try except, we're going to talk about more in a second. But basically, just have in your mind, if I'm taking input from the user, I need to check on it. I can't trust them to enter reasonable things. Okay. The other thing we're going to have to check is it a reasonable number? So you would need some kind of block like this to check, is the desired angle greater than maximum, okay, well, don't let it go there. If it's less than a minimum, don't let it go there either. Okay. Otherwise, once you've checked all those things and corrected for them, then move the angle, the servo, to the angle my user input. Okay. So if you want to try that out, let me show you where it's at on GitHub. I can do servo. Moving a servo based on user input. So here's that repository. And you can copy the code from main. And you should be able to drop this on your board, run it on your REPL, and it's going to ask you, hey, input a number to move the servo to. You can type something in and press enter, and it should move there. Okay. So again, let me walk you through that again. You can give it a shot. So controlling a servo based on user input. Click that, it'll take you to this GitHub repository, and then you can go to main and copy everything there, drop it on your board. Okay. So give that a shot real quick. Okay. Seems like a number of you guys got this one working. It's good. Let's try a little servo example, in-class example. Attach a potentiometer. I recommend the little blue one that fits on your breadboard. And then what you want to happen is to be able to turn the potentiometer, and the servo output tracks how you're turning the potentiometer. Okay? So you can look back for the notes for the potentiometer. They're there. You can build from that code. All the servo code, these notes are posted. So give that a shot. I'll be bouncing around to help you out. Yeah, so actually, the question's come up a few times. Let me answer it once for everybody. These servos, particularly when you get to the outer edge of the ranges, outside of 30 degrees one way or the other probably, they have a feedback mechanism built in. And we kind of talked about that on Tuesday, I think, right? So there's internal feedback has a potentiometer inside that servo that's trying to measure what angle it's at. Right? So say you tell it to go to 75 degrees. It's going to get some measurement back from that potentiometer and try to measure where it's at. If it's at 75.5, based on its internal calculations, it's going to move one way and possibly overshoot and come to 74.5 and want to go back the other way. So the vibration you feel, is it trying to hold exactly the degree you told it to go to? Okay, so that's going to get worse the closer you get to the edges of the range. And you'll definitely see that if you have a lot of load on that servo. Because the load's trying to pull it away from the angle you're telling it to go to, the servo is trying to push it back. And so you'll see it cycle, and you'll get, if you have too much weight on the servo, it's going to vibrate effectively. It's a common problem on final machines. Okay. So you're welcome to keep working. We have this room for a few more minutes. If you've checked out, feel free to check out. All right. I'll post a solution to this before next week. I think try to get this one figured out. It's a useful one to think about. Making some output depend on some sensor, effectively. That's largely that's category of task is really what all this is all about, right? I'm going to take some information about my environment and generate some action based on that. Okay, so give this one a shot. We'll talk through it on Tuesday. Make sure you get presentation comments to me. Homework 2 submitted by 5 o'clock tomorrow. All right? See you guys next week.